Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Fourteen is up there. Yeah. Sorry. Na jatu kamaha kamanam upabhoginam shamyati avisha krishna vartma eva buyaha eva abhivardate. Najatu kama kamanam upabhogena samyati avasya krishna vartmeva buya eva vardate. Najatu kama kamanam upabhogena shamyati avasya krishna vartmeva buya eva vivardate. Najato kama kamanam upabhogena shamyati avasya krishna vartmeva buya eva vivardate. Let's chant. Najatu kama kamanam sorry. Ladies, please. Najatu kama kamanam. Krishna Vatmenva Punya Eva Devardhate. Na, not, jatu, at any time, kamaha, lusty desires, kamanam, of persons who are very lusty, upabhogena, by enjoyment of lusty desires, shamyati, can be pacified, havisha, by supplying butter, Krishna Vartma, sorry, Krishna Vartma, fire, Eva, like, Buyaha, again and again, Eva, indeed, Abhivartate, increases more and more. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation, as supplying butter to a fire does not diminish the fire, but instead increases it more and more, the endeavor to stop lusty desires by continual enjoyment can never be successful. In fact, one must voluntarily cease from material desires. So that last sentence was put in brackets, which means that Srila Prabhupada is explaining what the previous sentence is about. Let's do it together. As supplying butter to a fire does not diminish the fire, but instead increases it more and more, the endeavor to stop lusty desires by continual enjoyment can never be successful. In fact, one must voluntarily cease from material desires. Purport. One may have enough money and enough resources to satisfy the senses, but still not be satisfied, for the endeavor to stop lusty desires by enjoying can never be successful. The example given here is very appropriate. One cannot stop a blazing fire by trying to extinguish it with butter. Omaginas timirandasya gananjana shilakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Second. So here we have King Yayati explaining to his wife after many, many, many years, I think it's about 1,000 years, that in spite of the fact that year after year he's indulged himself heavily in sense pleasure with his wife, or more specifically sexual pleasure, it never really brought any satisfaction. Well, what did it bring? It must have brought something, otherwise he wouldn't have continued to do it over and over again for 1,000 years. So we must distinguish between what satisfaction really means and what relief means. Because that's all he really did, is he extinguished the tension, the anxiety, the stress that he felt from the desire which arose within him. And that tension grew, that stress grew, that desire grew to want to extinguish it. Otherwise, it was uncomfortable. It was disturbing. It made him restless. It made him shaky. And so he had to do something in order to remove it. And so again, as it is mentioned here, he would again engage in sexual intercourse. And for a few minutes or a few days, a week, whatever it would be, he would be relieved, not satisfied. When one is satisfied, in fact, the only way one can be satisfied is when there is the union of the soul with the super soul. And that union is a union of love. It's a union of appreciation. It's a union of devotion. It's a union of surrender. It's a union of reciprocal It's a union of reciprocal love. And that brings greater and greater satisfaction to the soul. When I say satisfaction, I mean that when a person actually begins to experience this union of love with the super soul, it's not like it's there and it disappears like sexual activity, and then it's gone. It's always there. The joy is there. The joy remains. The happiness remains. And it can be increased according to the degree of love that exists or that transpires between the lover and the beloved, depending upon the degree of purity of that love, depending upon the degree of surrender of the devotee, and depending upon how the supersoul or Krishna, in the case of devotees, it's Shyamasundara, to the degree that Shyamasundara actually appreciates the extent, the intensity, the purity, the degree of sacrifice that the devotee is offering without any sense of really having done anything. He looks for no praise. He looks for no honor. Looks for no glorification. Doesn't care for people's applause. He does it because Krishna deserves it. He does it because Krishna is entitled to it. Krishna owns everything, including his own body, his own mind, his own intelligence. He can't do anything without them, without the mercy of Krishna. We can't walk without the mercy of Krishna. Can't talk without the mercy of Krishna. Can't think without the mercy of Krishna. If he withdraws his mercy, you can become just a dumb man, just sitting like, Yeah, and there are people sitting in mental hospitals right now as I speak, unfortunately, who are sitting just like that. No real thought except, you know, the mind just bubbling away, kind of like a dreamlike state, which is not a reasonable one, which is not an intelligent one, which is not one which leads to anything creative or useful or beneficial to anyone. They've lost the capability of really thinking. Krishna withdrew that ability. He can give you the ability. He can increase our ability to think. I noticed that in my own self. I'm the worst person when it comes to computers and having to deal with them and problems that arise when they come. Sometimes I just shake my head. I said, what am I going to do now? And suddenly a flash comes. All right, try this. I didn't even know what I was doing. And it fixes it. So this is Krishna's mercy. Of course, there are times when I cannot do that, in which case I call the technical support and they do it. But for some small things, that Krishna is very helpful and merciful. It's not that I depend upon him or make him my order supplier or anything like that, But I'd like to save the time and use the time for his further extended service. I mean, that's what our time is for, to serve him, to glorify him, to assist in his plan for making this place a better environment in which one can grow in Krishna consciousness. Just as we have an environment here, we're all sitting, and just before we were all dancing, and we were just clapping our hands, and we were going back and forth, glorifying the Lord. It's a perfect, wonderful environment. There's no ceiling falling down. Nobody was shooting guns from outside into the temple. It's a good environment, perfect. Everyone was complimenting one another, working reciprocally with the other, appreciating each other's dancing and singing. This is what life is really about. So what we have here is an interesting situation. King Yati, as I said, after many years, he has realized that he was never satisfied. All he was doing is each time enjoying, he was putting another seed, so to speak, which would be the basis of another future engagement in sexual activity. Because every time one enjoys, it creates a vritti, that's what it's called. It's a wave of pleasure which enters the mind stuff, the subtle. Mind is like subtle material. And so it enters it, and then gradually it goes down and down. And if it's not something very deeply pleasurable, it just keeps going down and quite often is forgotten. But something which is highly pleasurable, intensely pleasurable, is not so easily forgettable because we are all in this world to enjoy. We've come here to be enjoyers. We've come from the eternal world, as Srila Prabhupada says, to imitate Krishna and to become an enjoyer, to be a proprietor, to be an owner, to be the friend of everyone. And we do this through various means, by trying to be very beautiful, very wealthy, rich, powerful, strong, influential, famous. Win Academy Awards and Emmy Awards and Grammy Awards and all these kind of awards. And it makes a person feel very godlike, very lordlike, because everyone's admiring him or her. Everyone's looking up to him or her. Everyone's applauding. I am the Lord of all I survey. I'm superior. I've won the Academy Award. I've won the Grammy. I've won this. I have an Olympic medal. I've got it. It's here. I'm superior, above and beyond everyone else in that particular category. Just see my opulence. This is the mentality. This is the madness. This is the craziness that a person lives for. And then time passes, and the noise of the crowd subsides, and one begins to miss that sound, that roar, you know, that approbation. And then one becomes very lonely for it. Nobody's cheering, nobody's applauding, nobody's glorifying. Who am I? Before I was somebody, now what am I today? Yeah, maybe a few hangers-on, fans. They ask me for a swatch of my T-shirt so that he can go to sleep, put it underneath their pillow. But few. Like, I can name many movie stars from the 40s and the 50s that when I grew up, nobody here would know what they are. You know, people like Alan Ladd, Rory Calhoun. These are big-time stars. John Wayne, well, of course, the Duke is still well known, the oldies but goodies, people who watch them on TV, maybe by young people. But generally speaking, a lot of these names, Vanessa Redgrave and Veronica Lake, Lucille Ball, all big stars. If you just even said the first name, people would know who you're talking about. So popular, so famous. Were they? Now nobody knows who they are. And some of them are in the old age homes. How do they spend their time? Watching their old movies. Oh, yeah, it was really, I can remember that heyday when I was up on the stage getting my award. I remember the roar of the... I remember living in this daydream, this illusion, that it was important, that it was valuable. And the irony of the whole thing is when they die, they'll just completely, they'll forget about it. Blank, onto the next movie, onto the next body. Life is very much like an infinite plex of movie theaters. You go in one, you watch the movie, you identify with the characters on the screen, you say, I'm that hero. You don't say that, but you actually feel it. And when he rises or triumphs, is victorious, you feel you are. When he's losing, feel you are. Consequently, when the movie is over and the happy ending comes and you feel that you really made it big and great and wonderful, and you walk out with your chest high, your chin up, because you're a hero in our mind. And where do we go? We forgot that outside there was a light out there. It was bright and brilliant and beautiful. But where do we go? To the next plex, just across the way, another movie. And you get into the next movie, and you watch that. The last one was a Western. Now this is a gangster movie. Then you go to a romantic movie, different genre. You get a chance to play different parts in each theater. And in playing these different parts, you feel like those people. I remember when I was quite young, I used to go to those cowboy movies. And I used to identify myself with the heroes, you know, Gene Autry and Roy Rogers and all these. And they would also, you know, there'd be shootouts. And then finally the bad guys, you know, would have to go to the jail. And then the good guys would go riding off into the sunset on their horses. And then the lights would come up. And I would not walk up those aisles the way I would normally walk when I walked down to the aisle and took my seat. I was swinging my arms like this, like I was a big-time hero. You know, I was Rory Kell. I was Gene Autry. I was Roy Rogers for at least 10 minutes till I came back to reality and said I was just a small pipsqueak who couldn't really do anything. I couldn't even shoot a gun, what to speak of. Fight with anybody. So my point is this, is that it's all forgotten. It's all gone. And until it's forgotten and gone, there's often a lot of sorrow, a lot of misery, a lot of depression. So coming back to the story, this is what King Yati realizes, and he instructs as he's using this story about the she-goat and the he-goat. And he's instructing Devayani and giving her wisdom. And ultimately, as we will see in the pages that follow, that he is liberated and she becomes liberated as well. So let me just mention one point, you know, in favor, because what we're having now is sex is just bad. Sex is just overwhelming. This causes anxiety, causes moroseness, causes misery, causes depression, causes all that. So, but then Krishna says that I am sex life, which is not contradictory to religious principles. So we have to see that side. He's not saying that he's opposed to sex. He's opposed to making an indulgence of it. Which is not the same as simply having sex for the purposes of having Krishna-conscious children. So when a person has sexual intercourse and has Krishna-conscious children, that's a great blessing. Blessing to the individuals who are involved in having the child, and a blessing to the society because they raise the child in Krishna consciousness. And as Krishna-conscious individual who is peaceful, self-controlled, patient, understanding, loving, compassionate, who knows something about good qualities and manifests good qualities, is a benefit to a society. So from that point of view, sexuality can be beneficial. And there are so many great Rajarshis who had children and had sexual activity. But they did not make an end-all and be-all as King Iyati did for 1,000 years. Rather, they knew that it could only take them so far, and ultimately, if one allowed the indulgence to be overpowering, overcoming, then an addiction, first an attachment, as it's mentioned in the Gita's second chapter, you contemplate the object of the senses, and then you become attached to them, then you become lustful, and then you become angry when you can't get them. And this is part of the misery that goes into the process of becoming addicted to sexual pleasure. And why addiction? Because, as I said, we came here to enjoy. Why do we want to enjoy? Because it is our nature to be an enjoyer. In the eternal world, that's all we ever did was enjoy, but the enjoyment was not separate from, apart from, independent of Krishna. It was in relation to Krishna. It was in service to Krishna. It was in love for Krishna. Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, do it for me. So if we do our action consciously for the Supreme Lord, offer it to Krishna, pray that he accepts the offering. And if we do it with love, we do it with dedication, with devotion, with a desire to please him, then he will accept it. And he will reciprocate. So the problem is that it is natural to want to enjoy through the different senses, through the mind and the intelligence. But all these lead to a big, big zero. But prior to the zero, we get lots of miseries, lots of difficulties, lots of tribulations. Man wants to possess his wife. Woman wants to possess the husband. There's fighting for prominence, making all kinds of compromises, and so forth and so on. Women sometimes holding back sex, using it as a means to wanting to gain something, or husband wanting to do the same thing. So this is a horrible situation, you see. That's why a sex in itself for the purpose of having Krishna-conscious children is fine. But when we become attached to it as our means of the highest pleasure in the material world, then we become controlled by it. We become addicted to it. And if we cannot have it, we become angry, we become hostile. If we become hostile, we may get into fights. If you get into fights, you lose an eye, you can lose your teeth, you can lose your mind. So many things. People have these barroom brawls on Saturday night just over the most insignificant, foolish things. Like they're arguing over two baseball players' final season percentages. He batted 375. No, he batted 385. No, 375. 385. And this goes on, and it escalates. Finally, one goes out to his car, comes back in. He says, no, 375. Sirens. So he can say he goes to prison still thinking, yeah, at least I won the argument. But he's going to spend 25 years in the prison. Does it pay to win an argument like that and spend the time in the prison? This is not something just making up. Do you find this on the news? Almost every day these kind of things are happening. People get so identified with what they say, with their team, because it becomes an extension of their own false identity. We see a very good example of this sex addiction in King Puru Ravar, whom we were just reading about a few months ago, I think. As you know the story, King Puru Ravar, he was walking along, and then who would show up in front of him but this society woman from the heavenly planets, Urvashi. Very beautiful, very glamorous, very tempting. And she came right to the point, because she had been under a curse that she would spend, I think, about 59 or 60 years on Earth due to some situation that had arisen in the heavenly planets. And she looked at him. He was very handsome, very attractive. And basically, she said, I'd like to marry you. She was very forward. So how could he resist someone like her? She said, but I have some conditions. And he said, what are the conditions? He says, well, she came with two little lambs. Very beautiful, very cute, very lovable. Oh, I thought you were going to tell me my time is up. Thank you. Did anybody see how he did that? Just so the next speaker comes up and this thing is going back and forth. He tightened this. So please, take heed, take note. Because I've been moving this thing back and forth for the last 15 minutes. Moving it towards myself. So anyway, another condition she said, I have these lambs. I will marry you if you protect my lambs. I will marry you provided you don't present yourself to me nude, without clothes, unless it's for the purposes of sexual activity. In other words, you can't be nude, and I will marry you provided that the food that you provide for me will always have ghee in it. So he said, fair enough, there's not a problem. Anyway, for 59 years, yes, 59 years, they engaged, they indulged, they went to this riverside, to this retreat, this mountainside, this beachside, just one place after another, doing the same thing again and again and again and again and again. Finally, Indra, in heaven, he was missing Urvashi, and it just happened to be when Urvashi, when she was mentioning the three principles, there happened to be one of the subordinate demigods was overhearing that conversation. His name was Vishvasu. So he told Indra that, he said, if you want, I know a way that we can get her back up here easily enough. He says, okay, go to it. So he went with his Gandharva friends, and while Urvashi and Pururava were asleep, they sneaked into the bedroom, and they took the two lambs, and they were going out, and the lambs began bleeding, you know, bah, 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 you know, like that. So she woke up, and then she saw what was happening. She says, look what's happening. And he was groggy. What's happening? He said, look, they're stealing my lambs. Go get them. Stop that. So he said, okay. So he got up, and he went after those Gandharvas who went outside. And then what happened is it was very difficult to see. And he finally was able to grasp the lambs and bring them back. But on the way back, there was another Gandharva who manifested some brilliance from his airplane. And Pururava was exposed completely, he hadn't had any clothes on. And she was seeing him. And she says, that's it. Violation of the principle. You're not supposed to expose yourself, as I already said. So he said, how could I? You wanted me to go and get the lambs, so I went and got the lambs. I didn't bother to put on clothes. He said, doesn't matter. She says, you exposed yourself, and that's that. I'm leaving. Whoosh, gone. Well, let me tell you, for that, he began hunting. And hunting for her. Asking, going here, going there, just about everywhere. Has anyone seen Urvashi? His heart was pounding. His anxiety was so intense. He was crying. He was wandering everywhere he could find. Urvashi, where are you? Finally, he found her. She was with some demigoddesses down by the riverside. And he said, how could you do this to me? We're married. He was so attached to her. Attached to her charms, attached to her sexual pleasures. He didn't want to, found it impossible to give her up. He says, you can't leave me like this. She said, but you violated. Besides, you didn't protect my lambs. So he says, but it was an unfortunate situation. She says, I don't care. You made a promise, that's it. He says, no, you have to have a little compassion for me. I can't live like this. Better I will just kill myself. So she thought, all right, well, I don't want him to kill himself because he has subjects to look after. So she says, okay, I'll make a deal with you. I'll come once a year and we can have sex for a child. He said, okay, at least that's something. So he would. What's really interesting is how he waited. He was watching every day. Okay, you know, like how many days to Christmas, you know, one day to Christmas, you know, 10 to Easter, 30 to this. He's counting, all right, 344, 343. Whoa, we're getting close. She's going to show. And finally the big day comes, and then she disappears. Oh, another 365 days I have to wait. Anyway, long story short, finally he did, was able to get up to the heavenly planet, and he was able to have more children with her. And eventually he came to his senses, and he did finally realize that this was not what it was. How he suffered, began to reflect on it. Why am I going through all of this? Is it really worth it? What is my gain? But a little tickle, and then that's it. So much misery, so much depression, so much difficulty. And so people today in the world, they don't know that there is an alternative form of pleasure. Real pleasure, true pleasure, eternal pleasure, infinite pleasure, which comes through loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And when we show and express and offer our body, our mind, our intelligence, our everything, when we recognize that all our properties, everything we have belongs to Krishna, and that it should all be used in His loving service, yukta varagya, when everything should be used for His pleasure, when we come to this realization and then act on that principle, and we begin to feel the reciprocation of Krishna, the ecstasy that comes within, as was mentioned yesterday, a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme Lord. By concentrating on the Supreme Lord, we absorb his virtues, we absorb his qualities, we absorb his love, we absorb his affection. And when we absorb that, we really feel good within. And we're ready to do whatever is needed. Service is a pleasure. Service gives happiness. Service gives fulfillment. It's not a drudge. It's like you hear every day, you know, at Friday when people leave their office. You know, have a good weekend. Have a good weekend. Why a good weekend? Why not have a good day? Every moment. Why the weekend? Because the weekend is the time for enjoyment. And all week we drudge, we drag through our jobs because they're not being offered to Krishna. As Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, do it for me. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu must be performed, otherwise work causes bondage in this material world. And bondage means you're a slave. And can a slave be happy? A slave has no freedom. A person may think, well, you know, I can have sex, or I can go drink, I can do that. That's not freedom. That's enslavement. Because we're driven, we're pummeled, we're badgered. Go drink, go have sex. But if I want, I don't have to, but they do have to. When you're habituated, when you're addicted, you feel so uncomfortable if you don't enjoy, if you don't yield, if you don't indulge. But a person who is Krishna conscious, you see. Now there's a whole other side of the pain of separation in Krishna consciousness, and I'm not dealing with that right now. That's a different kind of pain, and it is characterized by pure ecstasy at the same time that there is pain and separation. I don't want to talk about that now because that's a whole different thing, and it's fulfilling and it's satisfying. It's not like depressing, and as external material sex is. So therefore, as it is mentioned, in one has to voluntarily give it up. It's hard, it's difficult, because during the giving up time, there's this feeling of disturbance. The thought comes up. One remembers the different situations when one was engaged in this type of activity, and the result is that the juices start flowing, and before you know it, one wants to again redo it. So one has to stop it As soon as the thoughts start rising, push it away. It has nothing to do with reality. It's all part of the big illusion of thinking that we can enjoy unlimitedly when actually all we do is get unlimited unhappiness. That's what it gives us. That's all it offers us. And if we actually think about that, now the next question is, persons, they say to me, well, I don't have the strength to resist like that. Well, you start praying to Krishna, please. I mean, you do the practices, the chanting of Hare Krishna, you're listening to the Bhagavatam, reading the Bhagavatam, hearing tapes of Srila Prabhupada, engaging in worship, engaging of in deity service, cooking for the deities. There's so many wonderful activities that can be done. And when they're done with our minds filled with love for Krishna, that this is for you, Lord, may you be pleased by it. I hope that you give me the ability to make it pleasurable for you. When we think and pray in that fashion, then Krishna responds. And when he responds, we do it well. And when we do it well, we feel his love flowing through into the heart. And then it manifests in various symptoms. We see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita how Lord Chaitanya, how he would manifest not only 8 symptoms, but so many other ecstatic symptoms like being stunned and perspiring profusely, having the hairs going up, hair ripulation, trembling, weeping. These are all different symptoms of ecstasy that a person may experience according to the degree of intensity of reciprocation that one is receiving from Krishna. And so one feels such satisfaction, such fulfillment, such happiness, that all you want to do is share it. All you want to do is give it out. So when you have these books, you give out these books because you want them to also experience what we are experiencing. That's the nature of pure love. It wants to share itself. The nature of selfish love, it just wants it for himself, itself. And for example, it has a beloved whom it's having some pleasure with. It doesn't want to in any way, it's very covetous of that person. Don't look at my wife. Don't look at my husband. He's mine. To keep, to have, to hold forever. And don't you dare even look in his direction. This is the envious, jealous mentality of selfish love. But selfless love is here. Here's Krishna. Please, take it up. Worship him, honor him, glorify him, read about him. Read those wonderful pastimes, and you too will have ecstasy. It's sharing, giving out, everything. Not holding for oneself like that. So this is what Srila Prabhupada has so mercifully given us. And many times devotees, they tell me, this is very difficult for me to just like that. And sometimes one devotee, he mentioned, this was happened about 10 years ago. He says, I was having trouble. I was praying, you know, for a certain amount of time for Krishna, please relieve me. He had a girlfriend that he would see occasionally. He was a devotee. He would see her occasionally and for intimate activity. He didn't want to. It happened maybe once a year, twice a year or so. But he hated the idea that it was so overpowering, so overwhelming, so pushing. So he went praying and praying, and he still. So many years went by, and he was still, his prayers weren't being answered. Then one day, this he told in the story, he was jogging outside. And his foot hit one of the cracks where, between one part of the sidewalk and the other part, where the root of a tree brings up the sidewalk. So his foot kicked at it, and he went tumbling over. And he broke his wrist and also fractured his elbow. And he told me that the amount of pain that he was experiencing was so horrible, so terrible, so intense, that he couldn't sleep at night. This went on for 2 weeks. He couldn't even lie down. He had to sit. And of course, he went to the hospital. They did what they had to do, but the pain went on. And when that happened, he said that I heard in my heart, this is your punishment for continuing to do what you do. And the next time if you do it, it will be worse. Well, that was it. That was the end of it. And he said that I had seen him 10 years after that incident had occurred. And he said, no, never. Not only do I not have that desire anymore, but I look at it with, like Yamunacharya, I look at it with repugnance. When I think of it, my lip goes up in distaste. I want to spit. Because he became completely pure, gave up the whole thing. But it was difficult. He didn't have the inner strength. But then Krishna, through this incident, gave him the determination and the understanding that there's a better life, that all you have to do is just grit your teeth, follow the instruction, and eventually that desire will disappear. And he said it totally disappeared from him, completely. Because now he's just involved in devotional service. So it's not that that's only one way. Krishna works in other ways too, in which he gives a person more and more discrimination, and in which he increases the ecstasy of his devotional service, so that when one compares the ecstasy of devotional service and the pleasure of sexuality, there's no comparison. It's like stale bread, fresh bread. Well, if you've been eating fresh bread, you don't eat stale bread. So when we have the real, true inner happiness, then one can give that up quite easily. So there are different ways in which Krishna works with each devotee, enabling them, helping them, guiding him. But the devotee must be very, very dependent. I'm helpless. I'm weak. I have no strength. I have no. I have a desire, but I'm unable to maintain it. Please help me. And Krishna, when we pray in that helpless way, he's very, very eager, very ready to assist us. It's only when we're proud, when we're arrogant, when we're conceited, when we're vain, that's when he steps back and says, okay, you think you can do it yourself? Go ahead and do it. And we fail miserably. So miserable that ultimately we come to that point where we look up and say, please, I've deluded myself long enough. I need your help, Krishna. Please, give it to me. I can't live without it. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.